We would maybe never turn down that song.
Given the choice.
Like, we might just let that whole song run. You know what? Let's just do that. A good idea.
It's Yvonne
to let it go the whole song. I think that was a great idea on my part. Explain.
Well, why don't you tell
them? Okay, this is Linoleum Knife. I'm Dave.
I'm Alonzo.
And say what?
That was the great Lynn Redgrave in the 60s musical comedy Smashing Time, where Lynn Redgrave and Rita Tushingham play two girls from the Sticks who come to
They're from the north.
Who come to swinging London and have a smashing time.
Yeah, they do.
And
if you haven't seen Smashing Time, you should watch it.
Yeah.
Because you, too, will have a smashing time. You know, there are a lot of things that you bring to my life.
Thank you.
And one of them that is great is the fact that you showed this movie to me. When I don't know how early on
we were
it
in
was.
Dallas still.
We were still living in Dallas.
Yeah.
And you made me sit down and watch this because you had a VHS tape or something.
Yeah, they put out a letterboxed VHS tape before in the days before DVD. And actually, I have to credit my my ex and good friend Dave Kinnick, who introduced me to basically that song. There's a whole crazy montage of that song because what happens is the Lynn Redgrave character becomes a pop dolly. and that's her big hit, I'm So Young.
Yes.
And it's
her name is Yvonne.
Yvonne.
And they put out her record, and the name of the record is It's Yvonne.
And so that's
it's a great.
That's what turned me on to Smashing Time.
Stupid movie.
It's ridiculous, and it's got a lot of like really dopey kind of almost silent comedy slapstick bits. But Lynn Redgrave's like North Country accent is so funny. Like I met her years later.
Yeah. Tell that story.
She came to Dallas to do a promotional thing for Gods and Monsters, and
you were running the show.
Yeah, with the USA Film Festival. Yeah. So I'd met her beforehand. And
people
we were,
might not know what your function was.
I used to be artistic director of the USA Film Festival in Dallas, which is still a vibrant arts organization. I'm still a consultant for them. Anyway, so I got to sit down and have a drink with Ms. Redgrave before it started. And my general rule for doing the film festival was I never asked for autographs because that just always comes off as sort of tacky.
However, unless
I had a really cool object that I knew that the person signing the autograph would be like, oh my God, where'd you get this? You know?
Right.
So
and
like
you had such an object.
I had on vinyl the Smashing Time soundtrack. And so she was delighted, and she told me that for years after that movie, or I guess obviously, you know, much later after that film, that her children would ask her to do the voice, which I thought was great.
Mom, be Yvonne.
Yeah, exactly. and then I remember her daughter, a year or two later, did like a student film that I screened at the film festival. It was this really cool little silent thing. I don't know if she has continued in with filmmaking or not. I forget. Her last name's Clark, because that was Ms. Redgrave's husband's name. Anyway, Lynn Redgrave passed away a few years ago. It was very sad. But she was a terrific actress and very funny and very talented and got to sing.
And you need to see Smashing Time.
You need to see Smashing Time. It's a riot.
I really don't call it a riot.
Well, it's fun. It's silly.
It's really goofy.
It is very much of its moment. It is very much the whole, like, mod swinging London, Carnaby Street thing. But it kind of knows that.
And there's even a song in the movie.
Carnaby Street. Yeah, totally. But they're making fun of it at the same time. So, like, it's probably one of the movies that, like, I'm sure the art department at Austin Powers looked at.
Of course.
You know.
I guarantee you they did.
Michael
if
York
they didn't, then they failed.
Exactly.
At the
Michael
at
York
job.
Is in it, and Anna Quayle, who is one of my favorite sort of character actresses at that moment, plays a woman who runs a boutique called Too Much. and Rita Tushingham says, well, you know, isn't that going to put off customers if they think that things are too much? And she says, not too much, darling. Too much. It's a stupid movie, but it's really fun. You should see Smashing Time. And we should talk about the new movie, which are far less interesting.
What new movies?
This week, well, the biggie.
Oh, I don't care about any of those movies. Everything that came out this week sucks. I'm not kidding.
You didn't see one of them.
I didn't see Pina.
Yes.
You can talk about Pina.
Which opened in LA. It's already been playing in New York.
Everything sucks this week.
Pretty much.
I don't even have them in my head right now. Like, all my brain has been so many other places in the past 3 to 4 days since turning in the last review that I wrote this week. I'm not even thinking about these crappy movies. I am thinking about how January is hot tea drinking month. It is. Did you know that?
Officially?
It is officially hot tea month.
But every month is hot tea month for you.
Right. But this is officially hot tea month right now. January is the month of drinking hot tea. Officially.
Grandma, why is there a Mother's Day and a Father's Day, but not a Children's Day?
Every day is Children's Day.
Thank you. That's from Peanuts, incidentally. I'm glad that you're honoring, you know, the sacred traditions of hot tea drinking month.
Right now I'm drinking a Coulter Smoke, which is Lapsang Souchong.
Right, which is the tea equivalent of like a really peaty scotch.
Or a pile of burning leaves, if it were.
Well, yeah, both of them are that, yes.
And you would think that with the recent events of our home, I wouldn't like things that smell like smoke.
You are a glutton for punishment.
But I do, just a glutton. But this tea tastes so good. And then my friend Chris brought me this Cambodian honey. Mm-hmm. That's also really dark and kind of caramelish, almost. Uh-huh. It's so good.
So you're having metal tea.
I'm just having sort of dark, dark tea today.
I see.
It's not metal tea.
Okay.
Well, it kind of is. I mean, I wrote that thing. I wrote that thing for Graham.
Yes.
Black Metal Tea Party.
FutureShipwreck.com.
Yeah. You should go to FutureShipwreck.com because I write things for them.
Yes. You did a nice piece about the Rodarte show.
I did a piece about the Rodarte show at Mocha. I wrote a piece about the Yves Saint Laurent auction documentary. The Black Metal Tea Party piece about this tea that I am drinking right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an occasional, I wrote about the Christian Markley, Footsteps show.
Right.
From which I purchased my very first
piece of art,
ever in my life.
You can see footage of our wedding there.
I'm an occasional contributor to FutureShipwreck.com, which is a wonderful culture and art blog, from my friend Graham, who is a cool dude.
Speaking of Christian Markley, I put The Clock as my number one movie, and
Are you getting any hassle for that from anybody?
I didn't really publish a top 10 list anywhere. Like when I
me
when
neither.
When I did my favorite film,
maybe I should.
When I did my best film of the year for What the Flick, I thought this is too obscure, so I went with my number two, which was Weekend, which of course then prompted everyone to tell me what a fag
you're,
I am.
You're gay.
But whatever. Anyway,
only like that movie because you're gay.
Yeah, of course, no
you
other
gays
reason.
Only like yes. movies that are gay.
That's why I love so
that,
all those
Sex in the City too.
All those gay movies that I love so much.
Another
know.
Gay movie, or whatever it was called. Yeah,
anything directed by Casper Andreas. Yeah, you know, I'm first in line.
My vampire is a Wang. Isn't that what this movie's called?
My Wang is a vampire.
My Wang is a vampire.
Somebody should make that if it's not already a film. Anyway, when I posted my list on Facebook, our friend and former roommate Aaron wondered if we were having some sort of Freaky Friday body switch going on, because my number one movie of the year was a Christian Markley film. I included Uncle Boon Me. I had a Lars von Trier film, and I had something else that he was like, I don't know. But anyway, I did have kind of a... Not a dour top 10, but it was definitely less like...
Nothing dour about...
But it wasn't...
Uncle Boon Me is beautiful.
It was probably one of my least like sort of studio-friendly top 10 list here. But no, I mean, usually like...
Let the studios be friendly to us. Right. Stop putting out crappy movies.
But like, I mean, like a few years back, I remember my top 10 list had movies like, you know, There Will Be Blood and The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which weren't necessarily hits, but they were at least put out by major studios.
Big studios, right.
But yeah, this year my top 10 list was like Weekend and Attack the Block and Higher Ground and, you know, 13 Assassins and...
You got real indie this year.
I guess, but not... I didn't mean to. It just sort of worked out that way. I
thought you were a man of the people.
If I did a top 15, I would have included, like, Bridesmaids and Winnie the Pooh.
Thought you were down for the struggle.
No, I'm a pointy-headed ivory tower dweller, you know.
That's what I... The Muppets and Winnie the Pooh and Bridesmaids were on my top 10 list. I mean, didn't make one.
And of course, you know, like this.
They would have been.
This week on What the Flick, we did Contraband, and I didn't like it. And, you know, exactly. We're like, yeah, that didn't like anything.
Oh, you don't like anything?
Exactly.
Yeah, go see Contraband. You'll not like anything either.
What annoys me is that I'm going to be at Sundance next weekend, so I'm not going to get to review Haywire with What the Flick, which I really liked. You know,
it's so awesome.
Yeah, but you know, so I'm missing a chance to like a movie that involves a lot of, you know, guns and people beating the crap out of each other. So
you like plenty of movies with guns.
I know I do, but YouTube people are morons.
YouTube people are 13 years old.
Yes.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah. It's the commenters,
last,
mind
it's
you.
It's the last place that you can be 13 and call someone a fag.
Yeah.
And be racist.
I'll tell you, you know, I don't, but don't feel bad for me.
Insanely horrible, mean things to people.
I feel bad for Christy Lemire because, like, more than half of the comments are like, she's so hot. I love her ass. She's a MILF. You know, it's like, oh, God, I would.
Well, she is a mother, a mom. She is a mom. I think it's good that Christy Lemire gets lascivious comments on YouTube because
she can enjoy them in her dotage.
She can enjoy them. Yeah. Like,
she has a very good attitude.
It's not like anyone's coming to her door going, I'm here for you, baby.
That's
like, they're just kids from afar.
And it's not like they're calling her fat or something. You know?
They're saying that lady film critic is so hot.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want them to only say that lady film critic is
That's
hot.
About all she gets.
Okay, well, exactly. Then that's stupid.
Yeah, well, yeah. Like I said, these are morons.
What was the thing you were saying the other day? She's a lady doctor, the prettiest of them all. What was that? She was known for being prettiest in her class. Like,
we were talking about, these are the conversations we have, because we're such important intellectual film critics. We were talking about the theme to Petticoat Junction.
Which I do not remember. And that's how the show was already off the air by the time I was.
Yeah, but I grew up watching it in reruns.
Oh, you watched it.
Yes. Yeah. And there were two versions because originally the show starred actress Bea Benaderet, who was also the original voice of Betty Rubble. And then when she died, they brought in June Lockhart as this doctor who somehow was now running the Shady Rest Hotel. And so her line in the theme song was like, here's a lady MD. She's as pretty as can be at the junction.
Because that's like, what you want in an MD.
Yeah, it's like
they better be pretty.
Are you hot? Then no, I can't be bothered. I'll take my business elsewhere. But you know, that's like when we watch those old black and white episodes of What's My Line. You know, and if you were a woman that was anything,
are you a lady plumber?
Exactly. If you, as long as you were a woman doing something that was not nurse or school teacher, that automatically made you interesting enough to be on What's My Line. Are you a lady dentist? You know.
Yes.
Even, you know, a producer, Gail Mutrix, you know. Right. She was a lady wine steward.
She was a lady sommelier.
Yes.
I'm a lady film critic for the movies.com.
Every inch a lady. And
you are a lady film critic.
Yes, for.
For the rap.com.
And What the Flick.
And I'm drinking tea.
You are
drinking. All right, Contra.
Because it's tree drinking.
Let's talk about Pina. Talk about Pina first, because that's the good movie. Get it out of the way so we can.
Yes.
So then we can poop well, big turds on the
There's
other
one
movies.
Movie we sort of disagree on, but not a whole lot.
We
but
don't
anyway,
disagree that much.
No, not much. Pina is terrific. It is a documentary about the legendary German choreographer Pina Bausch. And
don't you mean Pina?
Yes, the lady introducing the screening at the Arclight Friday morning. Girl said, "Welcome to Pina," and I was like, "Is this a movie about pineapples?" You know.
Did you see it in the dome?
No, it was. Right. I don't know that it's in the dome.
I heard it's in the dome.
No, I think our friend S invited us to see it in the dome, but I don't think he knew what he was talking about. Because think about it.
What
if you're the Arclight?
That
know,
particular
shocking,
friend doesn't know what he's talking
I know.
About.
Can you even believe it? I mean, think about it. If you're the Arclight, are you going to put the German dance documentary in the dome?
Yes.
No, you're not. You're gonna
It'd
put,
be cool
you're,
if
you're
they did.
You're going to put contraband
Wouldn't
in
it be
dome.
Great if they did that, though?
Yeah, well, we don't live on that Earth. We live on another Earth. So yeah, she introduces it as Pina. And I was like, wow, they're trying too hard to be fancy.
Yeah.
Just Pina. And I'm not a, I'm not a person who's seen much, or maybe if any, like modern dance in performance. My familiarity with this woman's
We went to
work,
Terrence's recital.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
My familiarity with this woman's work pretty much begins and ends with the Almodovar movie Talk to Her, which, if you've seen it, opens with what it turns out is a legendary Bausch piece called Café Müller, and then ends with another Bausch piece. And she died in, I think, 2009. And so Wim Wenders made this documentary about her, and it's principally about her work. So, I mean, it's mostly a movie about people dancing. There are some interviews with the dancers who were also like her collaborators in these pieces. But the interviews are kind of odd in that they don't ever identify the dancers by name on screen. And you never see the dancers talking. Like, it's these sort of long shots of them sitting there, kind of looking off to the side or maybe looking at the camera with their mouth closed. And then their interview is sort of a voiceover, which is like, okay. My main problem with the interview parts was that none of them really had anything very interesting to say beyond what you would expect. Oh, she was great. She was a visionary. She was a poet. You know, she was my friend. Da, da, da. But they don't add up to much. I think you could have cut them all out of the film and it would have been fine. The performance segments, though, are gorgeous and exciting and exhilarating. And like, I have to totally rethink all of my prejudices about what modern dance is and how it's pretentious and inaccessible. Because this is all, it was really exciting stuff. And some of that is intercut with footage of Bausch, like rehearsing the dancers for these pieces. So, and it was kind of a cool reminder that, oh yeah, they're not just getting up there and doing this stuff. Like somebody actually choreographed it and it was rehearsed. And because it doesn't look, it's not like, you know, oh look, it's the swans, you know, this is all kind of crazy jerky movements, but it's very exciting to watch. And then the movie is made in 3D, which I guess now, like, this is going to be the next thing, is German guys making 3D documentaries, because last year we had Werner Herzog's Cave of Forgotten Dreams. And it's really exciting 3D. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of Cave of Forgotten Dreams. I liked the 3D because it's sort of, you need that sense of depth because it's a movie about caves, you know. But here you have a movie that's a dance film that's in 3D. And it's a lot more effective, I think, than something like Step Up 3D, where there were not nearly enough sneakers in my face.
Bad.
You know?
That was not a good movie.
But this movie, I mean, like it kind of creates the depth of the performance space, but then also sort of kind of brings things out, you know, in the other direction on the Z axis, like basically out of the screen towards the audience. Because Bausch's thing, one of her things was that she liked to implement a lot of nature into the pieces. So like she would have a giant boulder on stage and there would be rain and like big puddles on stage that dancers would be sliding through and jumping in and, you know, putting buckets and pouring it on themselves and all that kind of thing. So you got the water splashing out at you. There's one part where there's a woman who's dancing in a forest with a leaf blower, which is kind of nice. Cool. And so the leaves are coming out at you. Anyway, it's a really cool movie. I don't usually, with the exception of something like, you know, Harold and Kumar Christmas, I don't usually say, oh, you got to see this in 3D. But if Pina comes to where you are and you can see it in 3D, see it in 3D. It's extraordinary.
Now, Step Up 2, The Streets, had been in 3D.
Yeah, that would have been a whole other thing.
That would have been a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Because that... Everyone thinks I'm kidding. Because when I just said Step Up 3 is not good, I'm sure there were people out there going, well, of course it wasn't good. It was like...
But no, Step Up 2.
Step Up 2.
The Streets.
Rad. Such a rad movie. And in 3D,
would have been... Radder.
Radder, yeah.
Step Up 1 was pretty lame, as I remember.
Step Up 1 was crap.
Isn't that the movie that inflicted Channing Tatum on us for the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so PETA, go see it. And then yeah, everything else this week was kind of meh. The movie that
not kind of meh.
Okay. It was either aggressively terrible or let's do the one that we disagreed on because I kind of liked it a little.
The Divide.
The Divide.
Is that on on demand?
No.
On demand, it's not. So you're just, it's just going to, I mean, it's most people aren't going to get that movie.
It's Anchor Bay, so it's, I think it's opening sort of.
A few hundred screens.
Yeah, maybe. Limited. Okay. It may expand depending on how it does. I don't know. But yeah,
See if I can find it.
It may not get
that
to,
information.
It may not get to where you are until it comes out on DVD, but.
Nuclear things happen.
Yeah, the movie opens with a mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
And so it's New York and all these people go running down to the basement of their building. Where the super, played by Michael Biehn, has basically set up this shelter and has, you know, canned goods.
It's a big basement.
Water. Yeah, big, pretty big basement.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're stuck down there for...
Days and days.
And, you know, as you might imagine, they start getting violent and, you know, possessive of the food and, you know... Alliances form and it gets very
alliances are broken.
It gets very Lord of the Flies down in that piece.
down in that piece.
And
you gotta stop saying that. You gotta stop that.
And in the you know, I guess in an attempt to make it seem less like a play, there is a moment where one of the characters where they get sort of invaded from without, and then one of the characters goes outside of the basement to sort of investigate what's going on. And then the whole, that's all sort of dropped and never really pursued.
Yes.
Which is a failing of the film. I mean, it's not a particularly good film, but I found it mostly, you know, I thought it was pretty intense and I was interested to see where it was going to go.
It wasn't intense. It was just gnarly and just full of people doing horrible things.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's basically, you know, watching people lose their grip and get terrible, and there's only so many ways you can.
And watching Roseanne Arquette get, like, repeatedly raped. Like again and again and again. Like, and it's this very sort of lethargic, sort of mechanical way. Like, she's just stationed in a room, and guys just go in there and just rape her. And I mean, and that's in this movie. It's a lot in this movie. And
right, but it's not like
it's not presented in a
prurient way. I mean,
no, it's presented in a way that's super gross. That is gross to look at. Like it doesn't have any of the visceral sort of punch that the rape scenes in Dragon Tattoo have.
But
it's this sort of dead. But she
at some point, I mean, she starts out almost voluntary in this.
She's losing her mind.
Yeah, she's you know, she loses her child. She gets kind of benumbed over it. She
seeks to unnumb the pain with constant boning.
Yeah, and basically kind of aligns herself with the ones who wind up becoming the sort of alpha males.
And then they turn on her and just start raping her to death.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm morally, you know, shocked by that as a storyline,
and I'm not approving of it as an activity.
I'm
saying that as is presented in the film,
it just wore me down, and as did everything else about this movie, because the whole point of the film is people sure do suck. Oh, guess what? If the world comes to an end, you might as well just die because...
Yeah, the lucky ones are the ones that get fried.
The lucky ones are the ones who die because if you live, the people who you survive with, they're gross. And they're going to probably end up raping you to death. Ta-da, the end. Unless you're Lauren German from Hostel 2, the girl who lives in Hostel 2. You know, and that's basically her role in this movie too.
Yeah.
The girl who lives. Sorry to spoil it.
I found it sort of effectively creepy and it kind of put me on edge. And it's not a great movie, but I didn't.
I found it annoying.
I didn't
I found it
dislike
annoying,
it.
Like in this way that you take it this guy,
Xavier Jean,
he's one of the French extreme horror dudes who made Frontiers, which is this brutal, sort of Texas Chainsaw Massacre-ish kind of movie. In the way that it's like people stuck in a house full of like lunatic murderers, Nazis, essentially. You take it out of the horror context and it's just irritating because there's no fear involved. It's just, let's watch people degrade themselves and each other and then brutalize each other and then die and never stop yelling. And the message is, people suck.
Right.
I knew that already.
I don't think it's a great movie, but
I felt like he was trying to tell me something. Guess what? I'm here to tell you, man.
No, I don't think it pretends like it's got any earth-shattering truths to lay out. I think it's just I don't know. I thought it was effective. I thought it mostly accomplished what it wanted to do.
Annoying.
Anyway. and then everything else this week was really bad.
Yeah. That's the one we disagree on.
We can at least debate this one.
Contraband. What? Who said what? I haven't looked at the What the Flick thing yet. So
Christy was entertained.
What did she find entertaining?
She just thought that like this was sort of the, you know, Marky Mark was in his zone. This is the perfect kind of role for him.
No, wrong. He's done this sort of kind of movie before, in an entertaining way.
Did you
see Shooter?
I did not see Shooter.
That was dumb, but kind of fun. It was the same kind of thing. Like he's, you know, the best at what he does, and then he has to. They force him out and make him shoot again.
One more job, but it turns out the it's a trap, and he must.
He's been in these dumb movies before,
where he's
really sort of effectively sort of cool in them, but this movie is crap. This is like Four Brothers bad. I mean, it's not as insanely stupid as Four Brothers. Mm-hmm. It's just boring.
Predictable.
Nothing exciting. If you've got a movie with bad guys and guns and explosion-y things and car chases and, you know, crimes, I want all that stuff to be way up here. I want it to be big and exciting. I want it to punch me and kick me in the gut. I want visceral thrills. I want excitement. There's nothing exciting.
There are like a few brief sequences that are kind of interesting. Like the armored truck heist is kind of well put together.
That's all right. Yeah.
The whole thing of getting the van on the boat with the thing opening up and the crane. That's kind of
cool. Van on the boat with the thing.
And yeah. But for the most part, this movie is a big snooze, super predictable. Like, you can totally tell what the twists are going to be way in advance. Giovanni Ribisi.
Super predictable is just predictable with a cape.
No capes. Giovanni Ribisi is terrible.
You know, I'm a weaselly Cajun man.
I'm a Cajun drive crime lord, and I go talk like this real loud. Oh, man. Although I like your joke that, you know, that he and Ben Foster are both in this movie just so that we can finally find out that they are indeed two people.
They are two different people.
And, God, Kate Beckinsale. Granted, they have written nothing for her to do, but boy, she does.
Well, that's why they cast her.
She does nothing in
spades.
Oh,
this is a role that involves nothing? Let's get Kate Beckinsale. She's the boringest person in film.
One of my favorite lines about her was actually something Gray said, I think, on the Rotten Tomatoes
Strip
show.
Cold Comfort Farm out of the equation.
Yes.
She's the most boring human being in cinema.
I think Gray said this on like the Rotten Tomatoes show or something, where her acting style seems to be the director saying to her, "Now in this scene, think, what would a stone do?"
She gives nothing.
Zip.
And
she gives Tyra dead eyes.
And yeah, she gives nothing. There's nothing about her. She's the queen of this kind of movie because she's in this, she's in Underworld, she's in that Whiteout movie.
Ugh.
Like, what other horrible? Let's go to IMDb. Let's just poop on her.
She was in that that broke down palace where she was mean to Claire Danes.
Mean to Claire Danes. I bet they were mean to each other, frankly.
I think Claire Danes was still young and not as mean as she. She may have become later. Not that I would know firsthand about any of that. There was another movie.
She's beautiful.
There was another
Kate Beckinsale is beautiful.
There was an early Kate Beckinsale movie that I might have screened in Dallas that was harmless and disposable. The main thing I remember about it.
Everybody's Fine.
The new one?
Ugh, yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. Whiteout.
Blech.
All the crappy Underworld movies, which are completely boring anything.
Yeah.
Nothing But the Truth. What was that?
Wasn't that a Rod Lurie movie?
Was it?
It's the one that's about what's her face from the New York Times.
I saw that. That was terrible too. what else? Fragments. Do I know what that is?
No idea.
Hang on, I'm looking it up here.
She's in that crazy movie where Gary Oldman plays a dwarf.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With Matthew
yeah.
McConaughey.
I don't know that I saw Fragments. Vacancy. Snow Angels.
Where she's a beautiful Kate Beckinsale is a waitress in a Chinese restaurant in a small town. Right. Thanks, Sundance.
She was in Click.
The
Adam Sandler.
Oh God.
The Aviator. She was Ava Gardner.
Oh yeah, terrible.
Van Helsing.
Ooh. Actually, I take it back. I liked her as Ava Gardner way better than I liked Gwen Stefani as Jean Harlow.
Serendipity.
Ew.
Did you see Laurel Canyon? I didn't see.
Yes.
Laurel.
Okay. Yes.
Is she good in Laurel?
She is good in Laurel
Canyon. All right.
Lisa Cholodenko managed to pummel a performance out of her.
Okay. I'm sorry. Last Days of Disco. We'll give her Last Days of Disco.
Absolutely.
And Cold Comfort Farm.
There's another movie early on.
And that's it.
It's like her and Alessandro Nivola and some other guy. And the main thing I remember about it is them singing. They're riding in a convertible singing Do You Know the Way to San Jose?
She has been.
It's got like the word fish in the title or something?
More bad films and given more dead inside performances.
Tell me the name of that movie because it's going to bug me now.
I just closed IMDb.
Oh, Dave White. I just closed IMDb. Anyway, she's
IMDb shut down because I stayed on the Kate Beckinsale page too long.
It yawned and it closed. And isn't she married to the guy who directs the Underworld movies?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So she doesn't have to do anything. And she knows it, so she does nothing.
She does nothing. She shows up, and that's, showing up is 90%, and that's all she does.
She, in order to get back, what any sort of credibility that she might have ever had, she needs to be in as many good movies as she has been in bad movies. And that's going to take her the rest of her career. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? She could always pull one of those, Anne Margaret things where, she goes from
when she's 50?
Yeah, exactly. Where she suddenly becomes like a serious actress.
Yeah.
Kate Beckinsale. Anyway, so yeah, Contraband, it's terrible. Don't waste your money.
Yeah. Save it for Haywire.
Exactly.
Haywire is awesome.
Much more fun. Yeah. We'll talk about that when I get back from Park City.
Oh, yeah. What are we going to do?
I'm back on Monday, so we can just do a show.
Do we want to wait and do the show Monday?
Do it like Monday night. Because we have an afternoon screening. I don't think we have one that night, so we can just do it then.
We might have one then.
You
don't know.
True.
Well, then next week the show's going to be late.
Yes. So
everybody should know.
FYI. Yeah. And then there's Joyful Noise.
I would rather watch Straight Talk again, twice in a row, than...
I know, the words fail me. It's literally,
this movie harmed me.
It's literally one of those movies where you get whiplash going, wait, what? Where? Huh? Who? What? Like, it's so chopped together and clearly, went through, what appears to have been a torturous post-production process, because there is no way, nobody wrote the movie that is on screen now. This is a movie that is made up of, crazy fragments that have been glued together.
Executive producers and studio suits.
Yeah.
And wasn't Queen Latifah one of the executive
producers? She was one of the executive producers.
Was Dolly Parton one of the producers?
Not credited, no. Not that I saw. But,
I guarantee you that in addition to the normal meddling that comes with a big studio movie of this sort, that those two women
and their people
effed with this movie.
Yeah.
Because there are weird, weird, weird moments in this film. Like Queen Latifah's big speech about how beautiful she is at the end. Like, that comes out of nowhere. All the weird dolly things going on, like the costumes and the you know,
that's like trying to sneak sunrise past a rooster.
That kind of stuff. Like, you hear her say those things, and you're like, did someone just pull the string on the back of a Dolly Parton doll? Because
one of the 12 aphorisms that it spouts.
It was so painful to look at this movie. The only attractive feature of this film, and there are two, exactly two. One of them is good and one of them is bad. The bad one is that there is not one scene that makes sense between the two scenes that bookend it.
Right.
And so that becomes a fascinating thing. Like, it reminded me in a way of Something Borrowed that came out last year, because nothing made sense in that
movie.
But
that movie at least felt like it was consistently of a piece in terms of, like, it was just sort of bonkers from start to finish. This movie literally feels like something you would hand, like, this is a final exam for first year film editing students.
Right.
We're like, okay, take these pieces and try and make a movie out of it, because this sure isn't one.
Right. The good thing is Walk Away Renee. And that is the only moment in the movie. That kid, first of all, the Asperger's kid who's obsessed with the
band.
One-hit
wonders.
He's obsessed with one-hit wonders, specifically the band The Left Bank and their one-hit wonder, Walk Away Renee, a song from the 60s, which is one of the greatest pop songs of all time.
Right.
You know, and the in that kid character and in that choice of song, I finally heard a millimeter of what I believe Todd Graff, the writer and director of this movie, is actually about. Because this is a guy who made Camp, which is a very sweet, very smart and funny movie. He also made Band Slam, which is a much less successful movie in terms of its execution, but I think was mostly hindered by
casting.
By casting and probably some meddling. It felt like a little bit of meddling going on.
But
a bad movie.
He knows how to tell stories about teens who seem realistic, and he knows how to implement music into a movie that isn't a musical.
A very specific type of teenager. A musically obsessed teenager.
True.
Yeah.
But he knows how to make movies that involve musical performance and that are about performers. In a way that feels, you know, germane. It's not like suddenly we're bursting into song. So on paper, he's the perfect guy to have made this movie that's supposed to be about gospel music. The fact that you left this movie with Walk Away Renee and not Fix Me Jesus tells you something about the results here, which is that there's almost...
Or the Jesus version of Usher's
There's almost no gospel in this movie.
There's virtually none.
No.
There's one or two snippets of something.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, no, Queen Latifah sings all of...
Evangelical Christians to go see this movie and be furious.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be furious. Because
it's pop songs sung by people in robes. You know, Man in the Mirror and Higher and Higher and, you know...
And hacked up, you know, versions of hip hop songs turned into, you know, God and I are the best of homies.
That's
insane. Yeah, I can't wait. And all the sex stuff in the movie, all the sex jokes.
There's a running joke about a woman in the choir who has sex with one of the men in the choir, and he dies. And then that becomes the basis of a running gag.
Yeah. So she's Madonna in Body of Evidence. Yeah. She sexes him to death.
Yeah.
And that becomes a goofy joke for the whole movie. But, you know, the people like swearing and stuff. And I'm like, the Christians are going to hate this movie.
I mean, granted, usually when people swear, somebody comments on it, but they still do it.
Not always.
Okay.
And then they still keep doing it.
Yeah.
And so this wholesome gospel choir movie. It's just not. And also,
and if you're one of those gays who loved Steel Magnolias and you're coming to see this movie because you want to see Dolly Parton, she disappears from it from big chunks, including the performance sequences.
Yeah.
And her big throwdown with Queen Latifah, which you would assume would be like the highlight of the film, horribly staged, not interesting or funny.
Here's
or
what
anything.
Happens. She throws biscuits at Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
That's what happens. And then Queen Latifah gets her in a headlock.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Dolly says, "You're going to break my hair." There you go. There you go. That's your joke. Enjoy the jokes.
Yeah. And Dolly Parton, you know, I know that when certain actresses have certain procedures done, sometimes, you know, eventually they settle into them and they get their
She keeps having them.
Range
she's
of motion back.
She's never settled into them.
She is. Yeah. She has rictus. Yeah. I mean, her face doesn't move. Her body barely moves.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You know, it's unsettling to watch. And I say this as somebody who adores Dolly Parton and thinks she's great, but.
She's brilliant.
But oh man.
She's brilliant.
This movie
she wrote every song ever made.
Yeah, but this movie is doing her no favors at all.
It is not good for anybody. It's not good for the writer director, Todd Graff. It's not good for Dolly Parton. It's not good for Queen Latifah. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible movie.
I think for Todd Graff at least, it's so obvious that this movie was taken away from him. That
only to people who know what he's done before and what he's capable of, and
I guess,
and everyone else will just be like, first of all, I don't know who this guy is, and secondly, that movie's crap.
Yeah.
I want him to have been paid a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and I want him to take a million of that money and go make another movie like Camp,
right?
And just let IFC handle it, you know, or whoever, because. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't want to be that guy. Maybe he wants to be a guy who works with the big dogs and works with the big studios and gets stuff made, even if it's garbage. Maybe he's that guy. I don't know. Maybe he's decided that he doesn't want to, you know, struggle. He wants to just be the guy for hire or whatever and go make movies and
What he needs to do is he needs to hook up with a producer who will protect him. Like, you know, Zayden and Marin or somebody who digs his vision and understands what he does well and will shield him from this kind of lunacy. You know, I don't know, maybe not Zayden and Marin, but you know, somebody like one of those the big producers who still make musicals, and they're out there, you know, who understand what he's capable of doing and allows him to do it in a way where nobody is messing with it, because this is a catastrophe.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people tell me, you know, this week, they're like, "I'm going to go see it because I love Queen Latifah and I love Dolly Parton." I'm like, "You're not going to love them after you see this movie."
No, yeah. you're going to feel bad for them for having been in it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even fun in the bad way unless, and I will always, you know, qualify this statement, unless you are in an empty theater. With your friends, and you're with friends that are really funny, who can rip it with you. But you know, like, don't do that in a crowded theater because that's not polite. And
this movie is worse than Burlesque.
Yeah.
Because Burlesque, for all of its blandness, at least had a uniformity to it. This movie is just choppy.
It's like a pinball machine.
Yeah.
It just bounces off of everything.
It's like those spinning color wheels they do at county fairs, and they just, here's a squirt of Dolly, and here's some Latifah, and oops, we forgot to put paper in it. You know, that's what you wind up with here.
Yeah. God and I are the best of friends. That's true. That's true. Simply very true.
Okay.
You know, we're the best of homies.
And, not friends, homies.
We're homies. Yeah. What else are we talking about this
that's
week?
It.
That's all the movies.
So what's your DVD pick?
I don't know. What is my DVD pick?
You were going to do
Didn't
that.
You tell me that what my DVD pick was going to be?
I made a suggestion.
What was the suggestion?
Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Go get that.
It's also available on Netflix streaming.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil is hilarious. And violent as
all get out.
Thank you. Thank you for putting that word out there so I could stop struggling for
this.
Yeah. No, it's a horror movie that messes around with horror conventions and in the process is really funny.
And stars two really funny.
Stars actors. Two really funny people.
Alan Tudyk.
Tyler.
And Tyler Labine.
Labine and Alan Tudyk. As Tucker and Dale, who are, you know, the closest thing to a Brokeback Mountain couple you can get and still be heterosexual. And intruding into their little peaceful, idyllic cabin in the woods weekend are some idiot college students who are insistent upon being terrorized by a couple of hicks. And therefore, because they are insistent upon that, it becomes so.
A self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so in the process of assuming that these two hicks are chasing them and out to kill them, they wind up all accidentally killing each other. And it is really, really funny.
I need to see
it. I had a great, great time. I watched it with some other film critics in the screening room who are of the snootier variety. Uh-huh. And even they were laughing.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I think Robert and Christy were there too with me as well. I think they were both in that same screening. Yeah, and they thought it was funny too.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay, I need one. It's a 2011 movie I need to see for sure. Mine is from the Criterion Collection. Godzilla.
Oh, that's right, because the Blu-ray and the
yes,
and the packaging
has a pop-up.
Has a pop-up Godzilla in it.
It's really cool. And it includes both the original Japanese Gojira, which is a, you know, somewhat more serious movie, and then the American...
It's actually a very serious
movie. And then Godzilla, yeah. King of the Monsters with Raymond Burr, the American edit with the English dub. And I was thinking about this. I mean, because the original Gojira is basically this... He's a big, giant, fire-breathing metaphor for the A-bomb, you know, that had so recently devastated parts of Japan. And... when you think that that's how the franchise started, and then that it eventually became, you know, Destroy All Monsters and like these sort of kiddie movies, I'm trying to imagine what the equivalent of that would be like. It'd be sort of like if you had like the fifth sequel to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo had Elizabeth and Mikhail like teaming up with Pippi Longstocking or something.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't even know like what the comparable thing would be. That you have this sort of serious. You know, it's not like it's Hiroshima Mon Amour, but it's definitely, you know, has a serious intent and is about things. And then it just eventually became like, woo, Godzilla's friend of children or whatever, you know.
That's Gamera.
Gamera is friend of children.
Gamera
is friend. But Godzilla was also, you know, he was nice to boys in short pants, too. So is that it this week?
I'm done.
All right. thank you all for listening. You can drop us an email. Oh, I forgot to check our mail this week. Sorry. I will for next time.
We've been really busy.
Yes.
being professional fire victims.
Victims, exactly. Anyway, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, the Linoleum My Podcast page. You can follow us at Twitter @linoleumcast. You can check in to the show on getglue.com. We're still listed under TV shows, but I'm really trying to fix that. And, of course, we thank our friends in the podcast world and suggest that you check out The Popcorn Mafia with Gray Drake, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram, the Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Schmoes Know, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, I'm sure there's other ones that I'm forgetting. I gotta start writing this down. Anyway, glad you could join us. We will be doing a show next week. It'll be a little late because I'm going to be at the Sundance Film Festival.
I won't be.
But I am. We will tape a show when I get back, and I will share all the dirt from that experience. And until then, thanks, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.